Tonight's share is dedicated to the Nishmas Reza Bas Avola, Hashem Yinkim Domei. From what I understand, she was, I believe, killed in the Holocaust. Her Nishma Shef some form of an Aliyah through our Torah. Tonight's share is unlike we've done in the past. I know generally we speak about the Parsha. I do hope to speak about the Parsha still, if time allows us, but I felt that because today is the ninth day of Teves, and tonight's our Shir night, I felt that I wanted just to talk about something which is not as popular, not as known, but I think is extremely interesting. And the same way what we speak about the Parsha makes for great table conversation, I think tonight's Shir will make for great, great table conversation over your Shabbos. Just be careful. You don't want to sound like you know too much about Christianity, as we'll learn tonight, because that's what we're going to come out with tonight, have a little bit of an understanding about some of the early stages of Christianity, what's it all about, and how it connects to some of our halachas. So what's interesting is, if we look in the Tor, in Siman Tov Kuf Pei, Siman Tov Kuf Pei is one of the lost simonim in Shulchan Aruch. It's the Siman in Shulchan Aruch that talks about a bunch of days that you're supposed to fast throughout the year. And the reason why it's lost is because no one really learns it. The only reason why people know it exists is because it's right next to Tov Kuf Pei Aleph. Tov Kuf Pei Aleph is already Hilchos Elul, so people learn that. But before that, it's almost lost. There's like 30 simonim in Shulchan Aruch that people don't give too much credence to or look at. But there's a very important simon for our discussion tonight is in Siman Tov Kuf Pei. The Torah brings down the name of the Bahag. Now, what's interesting, we don't really know who authored the Bahag. We don't really know who's the author of the Bahag. It's a very popular sefer. It's known as the Baal Halachas Kedelos. Many, many halachas are derived from it. But we don't exactly know who the author is. There are theories out there, but it's possible that it was written by the Goinim, or at least in the era of the Goinim, which will be very important for tonight's share from a historical point of view. And the Bahag lists a whole bunch of days where you're supposed to fast. Besides for the major fast days that we all know of, right? Everyone knows tomorrow is Asar B'Teves, but we're going to talk about the ninth day of Teves for tonight's shir. And he goes through a whole list of days when you're supposed to fast. And the similar list is found in Shulchan Aruch, source number one. The way it goes is like this. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, it's in Metav Kuf Pei Siv Beis. It goes through a whole bunch of days you're supposed to fast. I only quoted some of them. So one of them that's quoted, which is highly controversial, is that we're all supposed to be fasting on the first day of Nisan. It's supposed to be a tainus on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Why? Because that's when the children of Aaron died. That's a problem, because we don't fast on Rosh Chodesh. That's problem number one. Problem number two, we don't fast in the whole month of Nisan. Chodesh Nisan is a month where there's no Tanais. So this is why this list becomes somewhat controversial, and as we'll see, whether or not this list was even accepted. But what the part that we need for tonight here is the middle of this list. It starts off like this. Second line in, this is a Shulchan Aruch. Code of Jewish law, writes a Shulchan Aruch. B'shmeinu B'teves. The eighth day of Teves, which was yesterday, no one knew was really a fast day. Okay, now we can talk about it because it's over. But yesterday was a fast day. Why, says the Shulchan Aruch? Nichteva ha-Teira Yevonis. Because the Torah was translated into Greek. B'mei Talmai ha-Melech, during the times of Talmai. V'yechoshech li'oilem shloshi yomim. And there was 3 days of darkness in the world. It was a very sad thing. Therefore, you're supposed to fast yesterday. Okay, we missed it. What about today, says the Shulchan Aruch? B'tisha boy, the ninth day of Teves, which was today, says the Shulchan Aruch, lo noida ezehi hatzarish iraba. We have no idea what happened. Very strange for the Shulchan Aruch to write, we don't know what happened. We all do it, but we don't know why. Says the Shulchan Aruch, lo noida, it is not known, ezehi hatzarish iraba. What casualty happened on this day in history that should be a reason for us to fast? Very strange comment from the Shulchan Aruch. Now, if you don't know why you do it, so let's stop doing it. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't say, don't do it. He says, something happened. We have no idea why. So this obviously needs some further investigation over here. What does this mean that we don't know what happened? Now, this source of the Shulchan Aruch, as I mentioned earlier, really comes from the Torah. The Torah quotes it in the name of the Baal Halachas Gedolos, and it's the exact same words. The words are, we don't know what happened. So if we don't know what happened, so then why should we give any credence to this day? So, what's interesting is, the Beis Yosef wrote two very popular commentaries, well, three popular commentaries. One is his commentary in the Rambam, known as the Kesef Mishnah. One is his commentary on the Torah, known as the Beis Yosef. One is a commentary that we learn in Shulchan Aruch. So in his commentary to the Torah, the Magen Avraham quotes it over here. What does he write? He says, "Ubeis Yosef kasev l'ri'isi me'oilom v'loi shemati mishenoig l'sanas behen." Says the Beis Yosef, I never heard of anyone, I never saw anyone that fast any of these fast days. It's not on the radar, it doesn't exist. Now what's interesting is, if the Beis Yosef makes that comment, so when he comes to Shulchan Aruch, you would have thought he would skip the whole siman. He just wrote, when the Torah wrote it, on that he comments and says, well, no one does this. Yet when he has his chance to write his own book, and his own sefer, he writes it like it would be Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. Very strange. So it sounds like the Beis Yosef was agreeing that the minhag wasn't accepted, but he still gives it much credence when he writes it into Shulchan Aruch. And then he caught something interesting. This is the Magen Avraham talking. Again, keep in perspective, the Magen Avraham lived in the middle of the 1600s. Right, we're talking now of the 1600s of the Magen Avraham. Right, the Magen Avraham has an interesting history behind it. The Magen Avraham was what we call today an elementary school rebbe. Great Magen Avraham, he thought he'd say the highest shiur in yeshiva somewhere. Magen Avraham was an elementary school rebbe. How did he become the Magen Avraham? He was always a big person, but one day the Shach came to town, and the Shach came to town to give lectures, and he asked all the people, his bomb shayla, and they told the kids, go find an answer to anyone you know. So some kid came to his elementary school rebbe, who was the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham was very knowledgeable. And he asked the rebbe, you heard the Shach ask his question, do you know the answer? So Magen Avraham said, yeah, I know the answer. So the kid runs back to the Shach and says, my rebbe told me the answer. Shach was blown away. He said, who's your rebbe? He said, I don't know. Third grade rebbe, second grade rebbe. So the Shach sat down with him for hours and hours, and the Shach was the one who made the Magen Avraham very popular. So the moral of the story is, be careful with the elementary school rebbeim. They might one day grow up to be big poiskim and you never knew about it. But in any case, the Magen Avraham is a great commentary that we all know of. But again, just to put it into a historical point of view, we're talking about the mid to early 1600s. The Magen Avraham died in 1682. We're talking about the mid-early 1600s. So the Magen Avraham makes the following comment. He writes, Avalaniri isi shaksuvim b'seif Megillas Tainus. He says that these fast days, unlike the Beis Yosef, who no one kept, he says these fast days are actually brought down from the Sefer Megillas Tainus. What's the Megillas Tainus? That we know of. There's a Sefer called Megillas Tainus, which is quoted many times in Shas. That's a Sefer that comments on all what we call minor Jewish holidays. Something happened in a town, something happened in history, we make a minor holiday. What's a minor holiday? No fasting and no eulogy. That's the Megillas Tainus, that's not disputed. When Megillas Tainus finishes in the back, there's a commentary called Yom HaTzomus, Days of Fasting. The question is, who wrote that commentary? So, says the Magen Avraham, it was written by the same person who wrote the first part, which means it was written by the Amoraim, the times of the Gemara. Says the Magen Avraham, Im came the Sakhtim, Im Chachmei HaTalmud, B'soich Divrei HaSefer Hazeh. He thinks that the origin of these fast days, the one we just quoted, dates back to the times of the Gemara. It's okay. So it's not the Bahag, but it's the Gemara. Then he says, "V'gam bal halach is gedolus kasvum." The Bahag also quotes it. So that takes us to even the times of the Goyim. So this is well-established literature that it's well-dated. And therefore he writes, "Kol dvarav divrei Kabbalah." And therefore he concludes the Magen Avraham, "L'chein, kol bal nefesh yachmi la'atzmai nefshele." So all of us who could, should have fasted yesterday, should have fasted tomorrow, and today and tomorrow we have to fast. So if you're going to be machmir, you got to go 3 days with fasting during the day while eating at night. Okay? So the Magen Avraham seems to believe that these fast days are brought down, at least from the times of the Gemara. What's interesting is that the Beis Yosef himself has kashas on some of these fast days, and that's why he doesn't like it. But they try to be miyashiv, how can you fast on Rosh Chodesh? There's a mefurish Gemara. The Gemara says in Tainus you're not allowed to fast on Rosh Chodesh. So how could the Gemara say you're allowed to fast on Tainus? So they give answers. That's only a Tainus that wasn't accepted by all the people. About a Tainus that was accepted by all the people, you could fast. But they give terutzim. What's interesting is Rabbi Yaakov Emden wrote a commentary on the Megillas Tainus. And on his commentary number 3, he writes the following. He writes, these fast days, which is the end of the Megillas Tainus, was not written by the same people who wrote Megillas Tainus, but instead it was written by the Bahag. V'shogah b'Magen Avraham. And he thinks the Magen Avraham is wrong. What did the Magen Avraham say? It was written by the same people who wrote Megillas Tainus. Says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, incorrect. It's not true. Magen Avraham is wrong. It was not written by the same people. It was written by the Bahag. Okay, who was the Bahag? The Baal Halachos Gedolos. Who wrote the Baal Halachos Gedolos? No one really knows. So we're back to square one. We're trying to figure out who made up these fast days and how binding are they really. But back to the Shulchan Aruch told us that whoever wrote it, whether it be the Gemara or the Bahag, it seems to be very serious, but we don't know why. The Shulchan Aruch says, we have no idea why we're supposed to fast on the ninth day. No one knows. It's not public information. So that's very confusing and very troubling. So what are we supposed to make with this information? So comes along the Taz at number 4. Again, to put in a historic perspective, the Taz lived at the end of the 1500s, early 1600s. The Taz died in 1667. So we're talking now the 1600s. Comes along the Taz, he says, Teima Gedoyla. He says, it's a pella to me how the Shulchan Aruch misses one. He says, Aisa Beslichas Shal Sar B'Teves. Says the Taz, what was everyone not sure about? Shulchan Aruch says, I'm not sure. The Bahag says, no one knows. He says, why does no one know? He says, look up at Slichas. If you open the Slichas that we're going to recite tomorrow, in the pizman that starts off Eskura Matzuk, it says, the Betisha by May, says Ra'a Seifer. No great secrets. It's not a surprise. We know what happens. It says, Ezra Sofer died. And if you look up the Slicha, it doesn't say it explicitly, but if you read the Slicha properly, you'll see that it's alluding to the fact that Ezra Sofer died on the ninth day of Tevis. So therefore, it asks the Taz, Vitzarechi and Rav. I don't understand. What did everyone not understand? Why does no one know this? He can't understand what everyone's in the spoil from. It's Pasha, says the Taz. You know what happened? Ezra Sofer died. Now, people want to answer that this capital of Ezra Motzuk was written by an Ashkenazic author. Rabbi Yosef Kairo was a Sfari. Now, he doesn't say the same Pismayim that we say. So what are you asking, Akasha? You're saying that everyone knows what happened because of the Pismayim written by an Ashkenazi, said in Ashkenazi shuls. Rabbi Yosef Kairo wasn't an Ashkenazi. He had Sfari Slichas. Sfari Slichas didn't say this, which is true. However, if you look in the Sfari Slichas, it says also that Ezra Sofer died. Now, if you look in the Sfari Slichas, I looked it up this morning, if you look in the Sfari Slichas that are recited by Sfaridim, it does also reference that Ezra Sofer died. It's just not clear from the Slicha if Ezra died on the 10th or Ezra died on the 9th. But clearly, even Sfaridim agreed that Ezra died during this period of time. So to say that this is an Ashkenazic Chiddush is very hard to believe. So again, we're back to square one. Why was it that the Shulchan Aruch didn't know this while the Taz? Again, the Taz didn't live that much after the Shulchan Aruch. We're talking about 50, 60 years. Rabbi Yosef Kairo writes, I have no idea. Comes on the Taz and says, I don't even know there's any idea. I have a simple idea. Ezra Sofer died. Something seems to be very, very strange. The Taz was the Poisik Ador in his generation. The Taz was the deciding factor of everything in his generation. We quote many times from Reb Soloveitchik that the Taz was the decider of which Svarim got printed and which Svarim didn't get printed. And when the Shach came out with his great Sefer, the Taz was much older and the Shach was much younger. The Taz says, your Sefer is so great, I'm not letting it to be printed. And Kachavit, the Taz didn't let the Shach's printer be safer to be printed. And Reb Soloveitchik says over, and that's why the Taz never gets halach like him. Whenever the Taz goes against the Shach wins. When the Taz goes against the Magen Avraham wins. The Taz never wins. Kamat. In Halacha Shur, whenever it ever happens, we always point out when we follow a Taz. So if Soloveitchik said over, he has a Messiah in his family dating back to Reb Chaim, that the reason is because of this, that the Taz was the one who controlled the printing presses at that time, and he didn't let the Shach Sefer be printed. That's the way the story goes. People dispute it, people argue it, but if Soloveitchik says that's the way he heard it in his family. So the question is, good, Ezra Sofer is not the first great person in history to die. We had a lot of people who died. It's a pretty common occurrence. People generally die. That's what happens.
Answer the first question. Why are we fasting for Aaron's sons and we're not fasting for Aaron? Right?
Yeah, so if you look at that list, there's a whole bunch of days. We got Moshe Rabbeinu's yahrzeit in there. You look it up. Tov Kuf Pei. You'll see all these days. You'll see Kaman you never eat. The best diet in the world. We're fasting half the time. It's a great concept. But the question is, why Ezra Sofer? So the Taz says he thinks it's Poshet, that's the reason. Now, the truth is, I think it's Mefurish and Rishonim. The Moshe, if you look in number 5, the Sefer Kolboy. Now, the Kolboy is another Sefer we don't know who wrote. Great Sefer. Look, what does the name say? Kolboy. It's all in here. So the author thought his Sefer was great. He wrote Kolboy. Everything is here. That's all you need. This is the Sefer to live by. Learn whatever it says here. But who wrote it? So this is also not Pashut who wrote the Sefer. There's a Kesef Mishnah in a Rambam and Hilchos Shofar from all places where the Kesef Mishnah writes that the Kolboy was the same person who wrote the Sefer Archas Chaim. Okay, so who wrote the Archas Chaim? So the Archas Chaim was written by Reb Aaron Mulunil. Reb Aaron Mulunil was a Sfaradisha, he lived in Spain, and he died in 1325. So now we're going back almost 300 years. From the Taz to Reb Aaron Mulunil, 300 years. We're going back to 1325. What does he say? It's before Shekolba. He writes, what happened? Nichtava HaTorah Yevonis b'mei Talmei HaMelech. The eighth day was the translation of the Torah into Greek. V'achoshech b'loil g'b'yom. B'tisha boy. What happened on the ninth? So he says, Loi kosov avayseinu. No one wants to say. Almahu. V'nimtza hasoid. I'll tell you the secret, says the Kolbe. I'll spill the beans. Boy b'yoy meis Ezra HaKoyin. I'll tell you what happened, says the Kolbe. No great chedushim. Ezra HaSoid for Ezra HaKoyin died on the ninth day. So where the Taz got it from was really 300 years earlier, found in the Rishon, Reb Aaron Mulunil. It's found in, also known as the Archas Chaim. He adds one more line, V'Nechemya ben Chachalya, and also Nechemya died. Not only Ezra died, Nechemya died also. So this Chiddush of the Taz wasn't his Chiddush. It was really found in earlier Rishonim. The Kolbe already writes that we know that what happened on the ninth day of Tevis is not a surprise. It was Ezra HaSeif. But then the question is, so why is it a secret? Why keep it a secret? Ezra Sofer was a Choshev Yid, a very important part of Klal Yisrael's history. So make it known. Why keep it a secret? What's the secret about? So if you look at number six is a footnote in the Kolboy. He quotes the Sefer Shulchan Gevoya. This Sefer is also quoted by the Kaf HaChaim, where he says that Hevi Shiyeshayimim Shemes Be'ez Ba'asara B'Tevis, that really Ezra didn't die on the 9th, he really died on the 10th. So then why do we fast on the ninth because of Ezra? Because on the 10th day we're fasting anyways. Because like the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, why are we fasting tomorrow? Because they laid siege around Yerushalayim. So we pushed it up a day earlier. Because if we're going to fast tomorrow because of Ezra's yard site, no one's going to remember it's Ezra's yard site. So we brought it a day early. But technically, says the Sefer Shulchan Gavayi, you want to know when he really died? He really died on the 10th day of Tevis. If you look in the Svardish Shasliches, it sounds almost mephorish like this, that Ezra didn't die on the 9th, like the Kolboy suggests, but really Ezra died on the 10th day, like the Slicha seems to be saying. But either way, you're going to explain it, this whole fast of today is Mesiaches, is connected straight to Ezra, nothing else, no major surprises. Yeah.
Why couldn't it be like the Shivaso Batamas that there was 5 reasons? So Hamasar Batavis have 2 reasons. The siege of Yerushalayim and Ezra.
Yeah,
so
I hear.
I guess.
I guess the Sefer felt that people can't do that, even though you're right, we do it by Shavuos and Matamos. The Mishnah says there's 5 reasons for Shavuos and Matamos, and nothing gets lost in the. They were all Chorban related. Well, Shavuos Saluchas is a bit of a stretch. We spoke about this in other years, how to connect Shavuos Saluchas. We compared it to, there's a Gemara Nevin that answers that Kasha, but some ones are bigger than others. I don't remember. Okay, I'm not sure. Now, there's an interesting piece from Yonis and Eibshitz in the Sefer Yaris Devash. Yonis and Eibshitz says that maybe we don't really know when Ezra died. Why can't we know when Ezra died? Why does it have to be a secret? So he says like this. He says, number 7, he says, the Braisa, the Megillas, Tainus, Leniskri, Mimi Sosa. The Braisa, for some reason, didn't want to tell us when Ezra died. Leinoid alone, no one knows. So we asked, why the secret? Tell us when Ezra died. So he says, the day Ezra died was a very sad day for Klal Yisrael. Ezra had the status of his time as Moshe Rabbeinu. And he was befitted to be the one to give over the Torah, Kemai Aidei Moshe, just like Moshe. Ulekach kesesu b'tohoi, ubimois Moshe lo yod ish kvurasoi, v'gankin kisa b'tohim rabo, ulekach nema lo yedana mahayaloi. So he wants to suggest that we bedavka don't know when Ezra died, similar to we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried, or Moshe Rabbeinu's death, because they're on the same level. We got to keep everything secretive.
You know when Moshe died, no?
We know when he died, we don't know where he was buried. So he wants to say, therefore, we did something similar to Moshe Rabbeinu. As I said, I found over here in the Sefer Yisrael Vazmanim, a contemporary Sefer, we discusses a lot of tonight's topic, where he quotes from the Sefer Ion Tfilo, who says like this, Ev shaloi mashikzeris atayinus lehoise b'shul misas Ezra. It wasn't because Ezra died. El b'shul shabim misas poska nevua mi Yisrael. It wasn't Ezra who himself was a chash of a person, which he was. It was that Ezra's death ended a era of Klal Yisrael, the era of Nevuah, which is obviously, understandably, a big deal. And that's why it gets so much mention, and that's why it's so chashiv, because everyone asks, why is Ezra different than everyone else? So first of all, according to Yonatan Eibshitz, he's like Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's already one answer. According to this pshat, it's because it wasn't so much Ezra, but Ezra's death really changed the whole status of Klal Yisrael. We were now no longer getting Nevuah. Ezra lived in the times of Mordechai. We're talking about during the times of Achaknes Agdoila, just to put into perspective, between Bais Rishon and Bais Shein.
And this would work out very good according to the Kobol that says Ezra and Nechemiah.
That's correct.
Because they both died at the same time.
That's right. Correct. That would work out very nice. So this is one pshat. Seems to be the pshat that the Taz writes. This is the pshat that the Magen Avraham writes. So this is the pshat we're supposed to assume like. There's another pshat, a little bit more interesting. This pshat is found in the Sefer HaKabbalah LeHaRavid. Now there were 3 Ravids. This is not the Ravid we learn when we talk about Rambam and Ravid. This was a different Ravid. He was an earlier Ravid. This Ravid was a fellow named, a Choshev Yid named Avram Ibn Doar, or Avram Ben David. He was, dates back to the 1100s. He lived between 1110 and 1180 in Spain. He was one of the earliest, he wrote Jewish history. That was what his Sefer Kabbalah is, a Jewish history book, starting from Adam HaRishon till up to his death. And he got died a sad death. He was killed. Okay, but this is his history book. And in his history book, he has a pshat in why we fast on the 9th day of Tevis. And he writes the following. He says that we know there was a very popular Jew in Jewish history known as Shmuel HaNagid. Shmuel HaNagid, the word Nagid means prince. Shmuel HaNagid was a high-ranking member of society in Granada. Shmuel HaNagid was so high-ranking in Granada, not only was he extremely wealthy, extremely powerful, big Talmud Chacham, wrote Svarim, wrote a commentary on Maseches Brachos. He lived in the 1000s. We're talking about that era, early era of the Rishonim, Shmuel HaNagid lived. And he, believe it or not, tell this to the Arabs today, he was the head of a Muslim army for 16 years. He led a Muslim army. Imagine that happening today. Nice, good Jewish boy. That's not a Jewish boy. A Jewish Talmud Chacham wrote Svarim. He was the head of the army. He was a general of the army. And he actually died in battle, fighting with alongside Muslims. He was a very, very well-respected person in society in Granada. He had a son named Yosef Anagit. Okay? Everyone knows that the sons are never the same as the father. Always a little different. So it says the Sefer HaKabbalah arrived. What happened with his son? He writes like this. Yosef Alevi Binoy Hanagit. Yosef Alevi. So first he writes a whole biography, a whole story about Shmuel Hanagit. Okay? Not so negative for us. We need to know about his son. Who was his son? He writes, Yosef Alevi Binoy Hanagit. Umikol Midas Tovei Shehayu Ba'aviv. Loi Chasar Loi. All the great character traits that his dad had, he didn't miss. Ella, there's always one. Shlehaya Anusan Ka'aviv. He wasn't the same Anivus as his father. He grew up wealthy. His dad grew up poor and he worked his way up. His father, Mamish, was a shopkeeper and he worked his way up to become a wealthy and successful at a huge palace in Granada and well-liked by the Jews and by the guy, but he worked his way up. Yosef Anagit was born into wealth. He didn't work his heart. And therefore they say he wasn't that exactly mu'urav im habrius. He didn't get the people as well as his father. He was raised, you know, with a golden spoon, so to say, silver spoon. He didn't get the way the people felt. And he writes like this. So what happened? V'leinoysa oil bin urav, he never carried the oil as a youth. The gava liba ad lahashchiz v'yikanu oysa sani polishtim. What ended up happening is the Muslims at that time started to hate him. They just didn't like him. They felt that he was a snob. He didn't get the people. He wasn't interested in the people. And he wasn't as devoted as his father was. His father, Mamish, gave ruach v'liba. He gave all his heart to help the people while he was a little bit more preoccupied with his own. He had some personal issues. He had an unhappy marriage that he was busy with. Okay, he was preoccupied. He didn't have time to help the people. So what happened? When you're not good for the people revolt. This was one of the earliest revolts that took place in Jewish history. This took place in Granada in the year 1066. And what happened? So it goes through the details. Achin Neherek B'yoim Shabbos B'tes B'tevis. He was killed. He was murdered, assassinated, whatever word you want to use. On the ninth day of Tevis, which fell out on Shabbos, quotes the year, V'kahal Granada V'chal Haboyim Me'artzos V'chukas Lirois Teiros V'gudulasoi. And all those who came to Granada, one of the things they had in Granada was an unbelievable Svarim library with tons and tons of Svarim and learning and all these great things that all came to an end once Yosef Anagit was murdered. And his death was Avelis throughout the world. This is the Chiddush. Says, again, this happened in the year 1066. When was the Sefer Megillas Tainis written? According to the Magen Avraham, it was written in the times of the Gemara. The times of the Gemara was a little bit before 1066. So how could it be that when the Gemara wrote, you're supposed to fast on the ninth day of Tevis, it was based on an event that was not going to happen until the year 1066? Writes the Ravid number one, he writes, it was brought down in this Megillas Tainis, v'loyodu mahi mikan yadanu. Now we know what it was. Shekivnu buruach ha-kodesh li'yom zeh. Whoever wrote Megillas Tainis, whether it be you want to attribute it to the Bahag, Bahalach Stelis, which is the Goinim, you want to attribute it to the Gemara, they had Nevuah. They knew what was going to happen. They didn't want to tell anyone else because you can imagine how Yosef Anagit would feel if it says when he's going to die. It would be a pretty depressing day for him. If they would tell him, oh, by the way, you're going to die in a bunch of years from now, you're going to die in the ninth day of Tevis. So they kept it a secret. Therefore, says the Ravid from Sefer HaKabbalah, that's what happened on the ninth day of Tevis. That's why we mourn. That's why we fast. It's because of the story of Yosef Anagit, which took place in the year 1066. Okay. Maybe yeah, maybe not. I don't know. Sounds interesting. But that's his pshat. That's his understanding of why we fast. Okay, up till now, nothing is too controversial. Mikanul habah is where things get controversial and somewhat connected to Christianity. On the ha'aris of the Torah, in the new Torah, they have footnotes where someone wrote commentaries on the Torah. And they write like this. Number 10, B'Megillas Tainis Tfus Vilna, in one of the Svarim that the Megillas Tainis, a different prince of Megillas Tainis, and one of the prince, they have the following idea. Kosev HaMefarish, the commentary wrote, T'Betisha B'Tevis Noilad Oiso Ish. Do you know what happened on the ninth day of Tevis? Oiso Ish, Yashka, was born. Okay? Or maybe Cheshbin Ledvarve, he brings a whole raya to how he proves this. He has a whole Cheshbin to know how we know Yashka was born on the ninth day of Tevis. The Kosev, and he writes, Mizet Tovin Lama Le Kosev Rabbi Seinu. Now it makes tons of sense. Why no one wrote it? You can't write that. If we're going to write that we're fasting because their leader died, we're going to get into big trouble. We know that the Gemaras were censored and everyone was so nervous about what the Goyim would do if he wrote things against their religion. So we didn't write it. Therefore, he writes, that's what happened on the ninth day of Tevis, Yoshko was born. And why didn't they write it? They were scared to write what really happened. But what happened on the ninth day of Tevis is Yoshka was born. Now, it does seem to fit somewhat around December 25th, which is this time of the year. But there's one major problem. And Christians don't know this if they didn't go to Bible class or study class. Yoshka was not born on December 25th, no matter how you slice it. It never happened. Honest Christians who study religion will tell you he was not born on December 25th. It's not true. There's no mention of it anywhere. The earliest mention of his birthday is in the 4th century. That seems very strange. For so many years, no one knew when he was born. The answer is he was not born on December 25th. Pope Benedict wrote a whole sefer on it, a whole book, coming out where it's not true. You ask any honest biblical New Testament student, and they'll tell you that he was not born on December 25th. So now, why exactly do they celebrate December 25th? So this is really a shmooze for a different time, but the answer is, three quarters of what the Goyim do on December 25th has nothing to do with Yoshka, and nothing to do with Christianity. The entire Yom Tov of December 25th is not commemorating his birth. As we just mentioned, he was not born on December 25th. He was probably born sometime in the spring. That's probably when he was born, if it matters. So why do they celebrate December 25th? For a very simple reason. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, Adam Arishan, right after the Chet, Adam Arishan was watching the world. And every day he noticed that Shkia was getting earlier, like it does in the winter. So before Yishe Gemara, Adam Arishan said to himself, ah, I got what's going on here. Because Baruch Hu is going to end the world. And the way he's going to do it is every day the days get shorter and shorter and shorter. Until one day, that's it, no more world. What happened, says the Gemara, finally it hit the point, which was last week, where it got the latest, where it got the earliest, and now it gets later. So Adam said to himself, ah, this is the way God made the world. I'm not getting punished, I'm going to live. He made a Yom Tov, the Gemara says. He made a Yom Tov for 8 days. Wow, isn't that convenient? An 8-day Yom Tov, says the Gemara. Says the Gemara, the Goyim at that time, who were pagan, they adapted this L'Avodah Zarah. While Adam Arishan made it L'Shem Shemayim, they made it L'Shem Avodah Zarah. And it became an Avodah Zarah holiday to commemorate this time of the year, an 8-day long holiday. So when Christianity first got started, as we'll talk more tonight, it was really a Jewish experience. It was a bunch of Jews. It wasn't any Goyim. It was all Jewish experience. But they needed to get the pagans to join them, because those were the only people that were going to join them. It wasn't the Jews. The Jews already rejected it. So they had to get the pagans. So the pagans were used to these holidays. This wasn't foreign to them. This was something they heard of. So it was able to kind of mix the two together, and they kind of say, you know what, it's a pagan holiday. You're celebrating. We're celebrating. Let's all call it a new holiday. And we'll throw in, yeah, Yoshka, yeah, born, no born. No one really at that point was being too medayik. And that's how the Yom Tov came about. And that's what they're commemorating Ada Yom Hazeh today. Now, we could talk more about it, but the tree that they have has nothing to do with Yoshka. That also is a pagan thing. The gifts, also no shaykhs. None of these things have anything to do with Yoshka. They're all pagan ideas. Even Santa Claus himself, B'chvaydu Ba'atzmoy, has nothing to do with Yoshka. Santa Claus has to do with a fellow named St. Nick, who's Taka Tzaddik. The St. Nick was a Yoshe guy. He used to give out presents to kids, and he died around December 25th, so we commemorate him also. None of these things have anything to do with the actual Yoshka or anything to do with him. But in any case, if we assume like this is correct, let's say we assume, so now we know why Tes Teves is a fast day. Yoshka was born, and he did a lot of bad for Klal Yisrael. Now, if you look in the side over on 10b, on the newer Shulchan Aruch, they bring this pshat also. They write over in 10b, on some of the new commentaries on the Megillas Tainus, they write, that's when Yoshka was born. And they go through the same shtick of Torah, and that's why no one knows, and that answers the Magen Avraham's kash, everything is good. Well, I'm saying, I think it's incorrect. I think this pshat's not true. I think they also didn't study their Christian religion well enough. To say that Yoshka was born in Tes Teves, I don't think is accurate. Again, it could be we didn't know, as the Rabbanim didn't know either. They were playing off what everyone else was saying. But it's just not accurate. Now, today we know better, and then the firmer Christians know it's not true either. Now, we also know there's something called Nittelnacht. That's a very popular night, where it's the night before December 25th, which was this Sunday. In some places, they don't learn Nittelnacht. Some places don't learn a whole year, Gzer Ato Nitlnach. But okay, some people are not so from. They learn the rest of the year, they don't learn Nitlnach. Why don't people learn Nitlnach? Where did Nitlnach come from? So the truth is, you shouldn't make too much fun of it. It's found in a Chassam Sefer. Nassan Adler, the Talmud of the Chassam Sefer, quotes from his Rebbe, that the Chassam Sefer used to not learn on Nitlnach. Now, let's just rephrase that. Not that the Chassam Sefer would stay at home and cut toilet paper like people do today. What the Chassam Sefer did was he'd go to sleep from sunset, wake up at Chatzos, and learn from Chatzos till sunrise. Why did he do this? Because Nitlnach was dangerous. At that time in history, the Goyim still didn't know their history. They thought something to do with Yashka, and they'd go around killing Jews. So it wasn't safe to go out. It wasn't safe to go learn. It wasn't safe to go to yeshiva. It wasn't safe to be even up late in your own house with your lights on. It was just dangerous. So people turned all the lights off, and they went to sleep early. And the Chasam Sofer said, so you get up after Chatzos, after everyone finishes their screaming and yelling, and go learn. I remember years ago when I was in yeshiva, one of these, you know, one of my... classmates in yeshiva came up with this new chiddush called Nitalnacht, as if he discovered America, and he went to one of the rest of yeshivas and said, Rebbe, I'm not coming tonight, say it tonight, Nitalnacht. So the Rebbe looked and says, I have no problem, as long as you follow the Chasam Sofer. Of course, he didn't know what the Chasam Sofer said to the kid. So he said, no problem. So you go to sleep at 5:30, you get up at 12, and you learn from 12 till Shachris. Obviously, the Talmud said, no problem, I'm going to go learn tonight, Nitalnacht, and we'll get over it. And that was the end of that. So, if we put it in perspective, it's not really such a thing. But today in the Chassidish yeshivas, you shouldn't make fun. Today in the Chassidish yeshivas, this Sunday night, they are not learning. They were not learning. They do everything else. They play cards, they play chess, they cut the toilet paper for the whole year. They do everything just not to learn, because Nitalnach you don't learn. Okay. There's a tshuva from Rebbe Avadya Yosef and Yabbi Omer, where he does not like this minhag. Obviously, someone like Rebbe Avadya Yosef, who was cool or Torah, every minute of the day he learned Torah, this is not something he bought into. And Eretz Yisrael, for sure they don't do it. In the Litvish Yeshivas, it was never niskaba. But what does the word nittel mean? So one of the pshatim I remember seeing is that it's an abbreviation. Noilad Yeshu Tes Leteves. Yashka was born on the ninth day of Teves, which is fitting this made-up narrative. I found in the Sefer Nitta Gavriel, also a Hasidic, where he says it slightly differently. He writes over in number 11 that Nittel is Sherashoy Miloshen Roimi. It's Roman. Natal Beroimi Loshen Hoylodo. I didn't know this, but apparently in Roman words, the word Natal means to give birth. So therefore he says, Natal. There you go. Vuhu, that's a pshat. So that's what it means. Leidas Oysayishu means he was born. Okay. So that's another pshat that people say, and that's why we commemorate the ninth day of Teves. Again, still a very hard sell with the knowledge that we know today that it's just not true.
So why do some people have a vachnach? Apparently it should be similar to a nitalnach.
No, vachnach is the night before the milah.
Right.
What is that?
So I'm saying, so the same way like when Yeshua was born, that the night before they didn't learn. Here it's just the opposite.
No, they tie in it. The way they explain it is because, you know, the whatever... Kedusha that came into the world when he was born, whatever, Kaychas and things like that, are in the world now, and therefore the Torah is going to mix with that, again, way beyond my understanding, but it has something to do with Yoshka's being during this time. Okay? I don't understand it, but I think the more accepted pshat is dangerous, and Baruch Hashem, that's not the case. There's another pshat we'll mention from the Ramah. Again, for historical purposes, this takes us to the late 1500s, early 1600s, the Ramah. The Ramah wrote a commentary on Megillus Esther. In his commentary on Megillas Esther, he writes like this. There's a pasuk in Megillas Esther which seems somewhat strange. The pasuk tells us in what month Esther was taken to Ahasuerus. The question is, why is that significant for us to know when she was taken to Ahasuerus? It was in the 10th month, the 12th month. Ooh, why is it relevant? So the Ramah writes in his Sefer, number 12, he writes the following. Why? Shabbal halachas gedolos, because this is commentary from the Baal halachas gedolos that says kol yomi deroy l'sanois, all the days you're supposed to fast. He also attributes it to the Bahag, like the Beis Yosef. The kasef test b'tevis v'le kasef amam sanabai. No one knows why. Ki le kasef rabbi seinu time, because they didn't give you a reason. L'chein kamar shemisas Esther hoisa b'chodesh asiri hu chodesh tevis. Esther died. Again, I don't see how you see that from the pasuk. The pasuk was talking about when Esther was taken. So some people say it over otherwise. They say that Esther was taken on the ninth day of Tevis. That's not what the Ramah writes. I don't know. Maybe I'm misreading it. He says over here, L'chein kama shemisas Esther. She died. So how do you know she died on the ninth day? She died in Tevis. Tevis is a pretty long month. So I'm not so sure how people connect this. The Ramah does it. The Ramah writes that this is connected to the Bahag. I'm not exactly sure how the Ramah understood why that's significant and how he saw it from the Pasuk. The Pasuk doesn't say anything besides for the month. How do you know what day of the month? So very unclear from the Ramah. Okay. These are quasi-controversial pshatim. Now, the final pshat of the night is the most controversial of all the pshatim. And the most controversial of all the pshatim comes from an Achron. Comes from an Achron named Baruch Frankel. Baruch Frankel lived in the late 1700s. He died in 1828. That's what we're talking historically. What does he write? In the back of the Shulchan Aruch, there's a commentary called Hagoyis of Baruch Frankel. Baruch Frankel, known as Baruch Frankel Tumim. That was his name. He wrote a commentary in Shulchan Aruch. What does he say in his commentary? He writes the following, number 13. He says, Matzasi Kasav Ksav Yad. He found a manuscript. Okay, I don't know where he found it. No one else apparently had it except for him. That says the following. Shabbates Teves Nifter Shimon HaKalpus. That a fellow named Shimon HaKalpus died on the ninth day of Teves. Shohishia Es Yisrael B'tzayri Gedoyla. He saved the Jewish people in a Tzayri Gedoyla B'zman HaPritzim during the times of those that were breaking Klal Yisrael. Nikva Yom Yisos the Tainus Oilom be Yerushalayim. Therefore, was it established a day to commemorate the day he died as a Tainus. Who is Shimon HaKalpus, and what did he do to change and save Klal Yisrael? This Shimon HaKalpus is also known as Shimon HaKippa, also known as Peter. The first time we talk about it in Christian writings, there's a fellow in Christianity known as Peter. Now, before we see if Shimon is Peter, let's talk a little bit about Peter. So in order to learn a little about Peter, so you got to really learn some of the Christian studies to learn about Peter. When I was preparing for this year, I didn't want my kids to be around. So it's bad enough that I have to learn it. They don't have to learn so much Christianity either. But there's a lot of interesting things in the Christian religion of how some of this stuff works. The way most of the historians believe it, that there was a fellow named Peter. Peter was one of the earliest, so to say, Talmidim of Yashka. He actually met Yashka. And they all agree. Christians believe Peter was a from Yid. He was a Jewish guy, a religious guy, and he got swept up in the Yashka movement, as many people did, and he became a Shtarka Talmud of Yashka. He supposedly was the first person to declare Yashka a Mashiach. Now, many people say over incorrectly that Yashka claimed he was a god. He never claimed he was a god. He claimed he was a Messiah. Different experience. He never said he was a god. He said he was a Messiah. The Shabbat Tzvi did the same thing in the late 1600s. Shabbat Tzvi never said he was a god. He said he was a Messiah. I was just talking to someone today, told me his father's a psychologist. He gets all the time people walking into the office saying they think they're Mashiach. So today, people like that, we take the therapy. Back then, people actually listened. The Shabbat Tzvi had a huge movement in the late 1600s. And Yashka had the same thing. Now, just for an historic perspective, the reason why Yashka was somewhat successful is because you have to understand the history of what was going on during the time. The Jews were terribly oppressed by the Romans. We kind of sidestep it when we talk about Hanukkah. We make it sound like we defeated the Romans and everything was peachy rosy afterwards. That's not exactly what happened. During Bayit Sheni, it was a very difficult time for the Jewish people. We were constantly being oppressed, financially things weren't great, religious things weren't great, we had corruption in the Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't exactly the perfect world that we think of. And the Jewish people, whenever we suffer, we always look for the light at the end of the tunnel known as Mashiach. This is a thing we always do. So we were hoping that someone would be the Mashiach. So this Yashka decided he's going to be the Mashiach. We can give a different share at a different time who Yashka was. That's way beyond tonight's share. Who he was, when he lived, what he did wrong, his life, but that's not for tonight. But so this Peter that the Christian religion talks about, he was a Talmud of Yashka, and he was one of the first people to declare Yashka the Mashiach. Okay, so in Christian belief, Peter is a very high-ranking member. He's one of the apostles. He's up there with the big guns, St. Peter. He's a big chash of a guy in Christianity. That's not disputed. What is disputed is, was Peter possibly an undercover agent for the Jewish people? So if you listen to Rabbi Dr. Schneur Lyman, he gives a similar share, but I'm going to say it's slightly different from the sources that I quoted. Rabbi Dr. Schneur Lyman quotes from the Sefer called Toldos Yeshu. Toldos Yeshu is a Jewish perspective on the whole Yashka movement. I couldn't find Toldos Yeshu, and I have Oitzer HaChachma, but the Shnei Lyman was able to find Toldos Yeshu, and he quotes Toldos Yeshu. The way Toldos Yeshu says the story is a little different than the source that I quote on my page. If you turn to the last source on the sheet, I quote from a sefer called Oitzer Midrashim. Who wrote Oitzer Midrashim? Oitzer Midrashim was written later than Toldos Yeshu. Toldos Yeshu was first printed in the 1700s. This sefer that I have, called Eitz Midrashim, was printed much later. It was written by a fellow named Yehuda David Eisenstein. Yehuda David Eisenstein was an interesting Yid. He lived 101 years. He was born in the late 1800s. He died in 1956 in New York City. He wrote a lot. He was a big writer. He was a philanthropist. He was a self-made. He was wealthy. Nebuch, his grandson was one of the earliest people to start Reconstructionist Judaism. Okay, Nebuch, they weren't as matzliach as him. But he wrote a lot. His writings are somewhat debatable of where he gets these things from. So we're going to read the way he writes the story. And I photocopied the whole page for you because I think it's an interesting read. If we don't get to all of it tonight, it's definitely worth reading on your own to see some interesting things about how he spun it. So if we'll go to page 3 for a second, we'll start at the top. Shimon Kippa. Now again, the Christians also call him Shimon Kippa. If you read up on the Christians, they call him Shimon Kippa. The word Kippa means rock. The word Kippa means rock because Peter was stark. He was tough. Peter was a tough guy, and therefore he was called Peter the Rock. Other people will see another reason why he was called the Rock. Don't confuse Peter with another character known as Paul. There's another Yid, Nacha Yid, whose name was Shaul. He was also a from Yid. And he also went off the derech, and he became Paul. They're very different. The reason why they're very different is Paul never met Yashka. He never knew Yashka. Paul came much later. Paul Stam is a fascinating yid. He started off as an anti-Yashkinix. Paul used to go around gathering up all the Yashkinix and killing them, kicking them out of town. And one day Paul got a nevuah from Yashka and he decided, I'm switching over. I'm going to play for the other team. He became a starker pro-Yashkinix. But he was a from boy, Sheva ben Yom. He also went off the derech, and he's known as Paul. So all the original great leaders in Christianity were all started off as good Jews, as did the leader himself. Yashka was a nice Jewish boy. It was only till much, much later that it involved non-Jews. The first stages of Christianity was all a Jewish experience. So, what happened, according to similar versions in Toldos Yeshu, and similar versions is said here as well. What ended up happening was when Yashka died, this all starts after Yashka's gone. When Yashka was alive, it was a joke of a religion. It had no one was into it. Very, very small. It did not take on any chashivas. No one bothered, except for the Roman government, who killed them over it. But besides that, no one really cared too much about the religion. After he died, Peter and Paul both made it their ambition in life was to sell this religion. So the way the story goes is the following. In the early stages of Christianity, Christianity was not what it is today. It was basically a different type of Jews, which means they were... Many of the pro-Yashkinics put on tefillin every day, and they daven, and they went to Daf Yomi, and they sent the kids to yeshiva. And at home, they would scream, Yashka's Mashiach, whatever it was. But there wasn't this clear separation between what we know today as Christians and Jews. And this was very dangerous. This was becoming a major problem. How can we have these two groups living together? And we know there's one of the brachas in Shemoneh Esrei that we recite called V'lam Mamshinim was made to root these guys out. We made a bracha in Shemoneh Esrei called V'lam Mamshinim. If you look at Rav Haiger in the Girsa, it wasn't V'lam Shilam, it was V'lam Noitzrim. Not much for the Christians, to get the Yashkinics, to get them out. How would you get them out? You'd say to the guy, you want to down for the Amid? Okay, great, go down for the Amid. And he gets to that bracha of V'lam Shilam, it's a little hard for him to say. The bracha is all about him, and it says you should have no success, and you should be eradicated, and you should fall off the face of the earth. How are you going to say that bracha? So the way they would know who's a Yashkinic, who's not, by whether or not he'd say the V'lam Shilam in the Shemoneh Esrei. So they had a big asifas rabbanim on what to do. So the way they came up with it, they said, we got to have someone go down and work their way into the religion, and convince the Yashkinics to separate from Judaism and become a separate, distinct religion. And by doing so, we'll save what's ever left of Klai Yisrael, and we'll know there's two separate religions. So Shimon decided, I'm going to take one for the team. He said, I'll be the guy. I'm going to go down. I'm going to teach them all these new rules. And again, I urge you all to read this Eitz Midrash, and that's why I photocopied this whole piece. He has all these ideas of how he was going to do it, and all the holidays that he changed, and all the riots that he proved to the people that he was really a Talmud of Yashka, the whole story. And he said that he's going to change the whole religion, make it all about Christians, make it a separate religion. By doing so, he'll save the rest of the Jewish population. However, he stipulated before this, he said, I just want one tonight from you, Rabbanim. I want that I don't lose my chelik in Olam Haba. I want it to be someone else is going to carry the burden of whatever I do wrong. And they said, don't worry, we'll carry it for you. You're not going to get punished. And the way the story goes, again, this is all what we call legend. There's no great sources to this. So Peter went and he did all this and he separated the two religions. And supposedly Peter, in Bitsanua, in privacy, he kept the Torah life and he wrote letters and he wrote tefillas that we say. Supposedly he's the author of the Nishmas that we recite on Shabbos, which is also controversial. And this is the Peter that we're talking about, the Shimon HaKalpos that we just mentioned. And he was talking a great man. He mamish changed the whole look of the religion. Because of him today, we have two separate religions. We have something called Christianity, which has non-Jews in it. And we have something called Judaism, which is only for Jews. And he really changed it. Now, if you look at the Christian research, they say it a little differently. They say there was actually a huge machloikis between Peter and Paul what to do. Because again, Kuli Alma Moedah, the original stages of Christianity, was all Jewish people. It was all Jews. There were no Goyim. Because what other religion existed? Is either you were Jewish, you were Yashkinic, or you were Roman, and then you didn't believe that you had many gods. That was the three options. There's no other religion. Islam was not around. Don't tell it to anyone else, but it was not till way later that was that even an option. So who was the earliest people? They were all Jews. So Peter and Paul had a machloikis. Should we do Kiruv and bring in the Goyim into our religion, or should we keep it just a Jewish experience? So Paul had a shtickle Torah that he thinks that the Ratzon of Yashka is to bring in everyone. Bring everyone under the banner. And Peter Tainan, no, I disagree. I think it should only be a Jewish experience. And the Mamish had fights, and they split, and they did their own thing. That's the way the Christians say it. That's not the way we're saying it. Here we're saying, okay, Peter's whole agenda was to make the split. So that doesn't work with the way they say it. That's the way they say it. So if you accept this whole beautiful story, so Shimon HaKippah was Taka, a very, very good person. So the way Shneur Lyman likes to end off, he says, he has a right that it's from a Rashi. And this is where I'm going to argue on him. On page 2 for a second, there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Very interesting Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah is referring to Rome. which today we call Christianity. The Gemara quotes a pasuk says, "Hine katan esaticha begoyim." The way Rome works is they don't put a son instead of a in the place of a father. You're an embarrassing country. You have no ksav loy loshen. You don't have a language and you don't have a ksav. You don't have a writing. What does it mean that the Romans don't have a language? Well, what did they speak back then? Right? We forget they were such a powerful entity, which is we can appreciate now when the part of the Rav used to say, "Where's Rome today?" Rome is nothing today. Rome back then, Mamas dominated half the world. They controlled everything. So how could it be they don't have a language and they don't have a right? How could that be? So Rashi says over there in Avodah Zarah, like Rashi, "Ksav loshen shel Romim me'uma acheres bo lahen." They borrowed it from another nation. "V'acherim tiknu lahem kol sefreim." All their books, someone else wrote. Who wrote their books? What do you mean? The New Testament was written by a guy. What do you mean? Who wrote their books? Very hard to understand Rashi. So in the newer Gemaras that we have, they have number 17. Number 17 was from one of the Chesreinus. We know that many of the Gemaras that discuss Yashka were taken out. They were censored. This was one of the censored and put back in. So what does he say over here? That the real way to read Rashi is the following. Rashi says, "Acheim tiknu lahem kol sifrei te'usam, Yechanan Paulus Peter." And we know those guys, Peter and Paul. "Vehem Yehudim hayu." They were Jews. "Loshin hu grammatica, hu aloshin shemedabrim by hagalochim." The original Latin they spoke was only the priests were speaking it, the high-ranking members. "Heim shanu v'omku haloshin v'asulam hevel l'chashrim b'fnei atzmam u'lesalkel me'al Yisrael." They made up a language that only they speak to be able to separate the two. "V'loishe kafru ki l'tevasin shal Yisrael nischavnu." This is all Rashi talking. 1100s, Rashi saying that Paul and Peter, they all did this whole thing for Klai Yisrael's benefit. They saw that it was very difficult for the Jewish people living with Christianity. They made themselves like they're one of them. Which Mishnei Elam thinks is the same thing as Toldos Yeshu. So he's convinced that Rashi had the Sefer Toldos Yeshu. Rashi had the whole story. And Paul and Peter did everything with Shem Shemayim. Everything is good. So therefore, what does it mean that they didn't have their own language? It means because it was all made up by Jews. The whole language, which was speaking only amongst the priests, was made up by two good Jewish boys. He calls it both Peter and Paul. The whole thing was made up by Jews. So therefore, says Reb Shnei Elyam, you see from here, that Rashi had the Sefer Toldos Yeshu, which we mentioned only came out in the 1700s. So therefore, it's very likely this whole story, because Shnei Elyam is bothered by the Kasha. You can't talk about an event that happened so long ago, and your first source of history be the 1700s. That doesn't work for any historian. So he says, it's not a Kasha. Rashi has it. This Rashi, that was censored, has it. Rashi has the whole story. Which means Rashi believed this whole story of Toldos Yeshu, the whole Paul and Peter, everything is beautiful. I have one Ha'ara. If you look on source number one, I quoted the Max Zavitri. The Max Zavitri was a Talmud of Rashi. Max Zavitri lived in France. He was a Talmud of Rashi. He was such a Talmud of Rashi that his son married Rashi's granddaughter and they had the Ri. Balei Tos was the Ri. Max Zavitri was a Talmud of Rashi. Very few people know the Max Zavitri, but every yeshiva bacher knows one Max Zavitri in the entire world. There's one Max Zavitri in the Hilchas Purim. Max Zavitri writes, "Leil Purim, you're supposed to get drunk." So that's the only Max Zavitri yeshiva bacher knows. It's the only one they ever heard of. They don't know who the Max Zavitri was, when he lived, what he did, but they know there's a Max Zavitri that says he's supposed to drink Purim night. So every yeshiva bacher knows Max Zavitri says he's supposed to drink Purim night. Okay. They go out to talk about the Max Zavitri. He also makes a comment that maybe even women should drink. That's why the Max Zavitri is somewhat controversial, but that's the Max Zavitri in Hilchas Purim. The Max Zavitri I quote over here is in Hilchas Pesach. Now, keeping in mind, the Max Zavitri is a Talmud of Rashi. Writes the Max Zavitri the following. He's talking about what do you do at the Seder. So he says at the Seder, you say Hallel, and then you say Nishmas, Yishtabach. Why, says the Max Zavitri, the Nishmas kol chai hu brichas hashir, v'yishtabach hu brichas hashir, v'arei sheninu sho'im olav brichas hashir. He's talking about Leil Pesach. Yeh sho'im remal oysa novel. The people say about that disgusting guy, Shimon Petach Hamor. Okay, I'm not going to translate that, whatever that means. Shu to shal doimeh. Yisoidai im oisan tehila. He was the one who was miyased it. Vishat tefilos kishaya asel, and other tefilos he made up when he was on a rock. That's why people think he's called the rock, because he say Peter was by a rock. V'chas v'shalom shloitia zois b'Yisrael. Ulechala umais diber. That's what the Goyim say. V'chala oimedav ezer, says the Max Zavitri. Anyone who says that Peter was great and wrote svarim, kishayivne beisamik dijavi chata shmeina. He has to bring a fat karma chatas, not a stam karma chatas. I don't understand. Max Zavitri was a Talmud of Rashi. Rashi was saying, now believe the whole story. Rashi believed that Peter and Paul and everyone was a Shema and everything is perfect. So what's the Malach Devitri talking about? I don't understand it. So it seems to be somewhat of a debate to the sincerity of Shimon. Was he? Wasn't he? And that makes a little bit of discussion of whether or not what exactly we're commemorating on the ninth day of Teves. But clearly, there is somewhat of a discussion to who was some of the original Miaste of Christianity. But without a doubt, according to all Shitas, it was all started by a bunch of Jews. And it was continued by Jews only till much, much later, till the 4th century, till Rome finally adapted Christianity, was when Christianity first became a religion. For all those years, it was nothing. It was a small group, small pockets. It was only till much later that it became, and now Nebuchadnezzar, it's a religion that for many years oppressed us. Baruch Hashem today doesn't. But we quote many times from Moshe Feinstein in the Tshuva, it wasn't so many years ago that they were quite mean to us and weren't very nice to us, even though they should have realized that it all started from Unz, Achenu B'nai Yisrael. But that's a little bit of the history about what took place in Tes Teves and who is this fellow, Shimon HaKalpus.